is going to come on up. Read our scripture for today. Do you want to hold it?
So we are always of good courage. We know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not by sight. 2 Corinthians 5:6-7.
Good job. What do you want to say to everybody? Good job, buddy.
Kids, you made it. Go to your classes.
Good job. Thanks, man. So much better than whenever I tried to read it. It's so fun to have the kids reading that each week for us. So this morning, we're talking about just being ready in the waiting, and I'm sure you've had periods of your life where it feels like you're waiting for what's next, or it feels like, man, I wish I was a little further along, but I'm just in this time where I'm waiting, or like even at the doctor's office, waiting room, all these different things. And so I was preparing for the sermon, I was like, I'm going to do a Google search. Because I know that as a society, we are not like big, huge fans of waiting. Like that's not like any like new, deep, like, wow, Chad, what great insights you have. Like we all know, like as a culture, we're pretty impatient. We want things right away. Like if a web page takes like more than 4 seconds, it's like, what's going on with the internet? Comcast, come on. And we get really mad. So I found this, I did some research and I came across the Smithsonian's website and I read this quote. That was interesting, and so I'll share it here. It says, the fast pace of society has thrown our internal timer out of balance. It creates expectations that can't be rewarded fast enough or rewarded at all. Like, how many times have we experienced that? So when things move more slow than we expect, our internal timer even plays tricks on us, stretching out our wait, summoning anger out of proportion to the delay. So like this is like when the web page is taking 5 seconds to download and it should take 2, like that 3 seconds feels like 18 hours and we are angry beyond control. We want to throw the computer out the window. Maybe not me, maybe you. But you know, we get, or like we're in a car and it's taking too long and the person's like obviously in the left lane when they should be in the right lane and there's rules and we get very upset because they should be moving over and things like that. So we get really upset. But then I read in the article and I felt really convicted by this because I think I suffer from this, and it's called, there's this term now that we have in our day and age called sidewalk rage. And I was like, oh no, I suffer with sidewalk rage. Like when I get behind, especially if I got somewhere to go and somebody is taking too long to walk somewhere, I can get irritable, grumpy, sweaty. It's really weird. And like all these different things, and I get really angry, and I'll say things in my head that are really mean and not nice, things that shouldn't be said here, but I'll share them with you now. So like I'll be behind somebody and I'll say terrible things like, hey, Slowy McSlower Pants, Mayor of Slowsville, like pick up the pace, you know, like let's keep it moving. And I just really mean, spiteful, hurtful things. And I mean, if you need to find another church, I understand. Like, there's so much anger within me. But I was reading this, I was like, oh, there's this thing called sidewalk rage, and I definitely have it, especially when I'm in a hurry. It's like I want to get somewhere from A to B, and somebody's taking too long, and it's like, why can't you just hurry up? Like, don't you know, like, what I have to go through? And they're like, no, like, they're just enjoying the scenery. So maybe you suffer from that, but it was actually, they had put a stat out there, like, since the 90s, which is only like 20-some years ago, walkers around the world have picked up the pace by up to 10%. One psychologist estimates, so one person. But we'll go with it. We'll go with it as fact, because it was on the internet. But anyways, we're like moving faster. We're going faster. And I think whether or not that we agree with that psychologist, I think we can agree that there's this desire. We want instant products. We want instant results. We want instant access to information. Like if you're watching something on TV, it's like, I need to know the backstory. Or it's like, we want to be able to know it now, and we can. We have this access. So it goes on and on. And so this lack of waiting that we just experience in our lives all around, it can really make us upset or angry or frustrated or not sure what to do in like these very real then waiting periods of life. Like, especially like as we're waiting for the next thing or the next step in our life and or the new job or whatever that may be, like that waiting period for clarity or for an open door can feel like an eternity because we're so used to getting things now or immediately. And so it begins to even stretch out what we feel in our lives as a whole. So this next part of this story that we're going to be looking at with Joseph is we find himself in prison. And again, like I mentioned last week, based on what he was accused of, he probably should have been killed. Right? He probably shouldn't have gone to prison for trying to commit adultery with his master's wife as a slave, but because of his favor, because of his integrity, because of all the ways that God had been working and the respect that the master had for him, he finds himself in prison, and not just any prison, but in the king's prison where the king's prisoners were kept. So we see, again, God's hand on Joseph, putting him in a position where he has access to people and positions that he shouldn't probably have, but because of what God's doing through him and his own obedience. So the scripture actually says here that the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge. So he begins to put things in Joseph's charge, and then the attendant doesn't even have to worry about it because of the way that Joseph is working and acting and because of his integrity, like we talked about last week, and because the Lord was with him. So again, God is helping Joseph to succeed in the most unlikely of place, a place that would not have been in his plan, a place that he probably didn't desire to be in, and yet God is using him, and Joseph is walking in obedience. So we read this then in Genesis 40, verses 1 through 4. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. The Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended to them, and they continued for some time in custody. So just a few things to note. Note how there was some time after this. There's already a period of waiting here for Joseph. He's in prison now, and there's this time, and then these guys show up. Likely it was probably longer than a few days. He's in prison. He's now a trusted prisoner. He's placed in charge, and then all of a sudden he finds himself, the cupbearer and the baker, the king of Egypt, they find themselves, they had committed crimes against the king, and you're probably asking yourself, what crimes, Chad? What crimes did they commit? And I'm here to tell you, while it's not included in scripture, I know the exact crimes they have committed. The first, the cupbearer, his crime was the king asked for a cup of coffee, and the cupbearer served decaf in a cowboy's mug. Most societies, as you can imagine, this would be punishable by death. And rightfully so. The king of Egypt, though, gracious man that he is and kind, throws him in prison. The baker, even a more terrible offense, if you will. What he did, the king simply wanted chocolate chip cookies. But the baker was concerned about the caloric intake of the king. So he tried to pass off oatmeal raisin cookies as chocolate chip cookies. Like, let's just stop with the raisins. If you want a cookie, put chocolate chips in it. If you want oatmeal, eat oatmeal. Don't put it in cookie form. That is a crime. Might run for president on that platform alone. So anyways, they're both in prison. As you can see why, you understand why they're in prison now. And Joseph is caring for them. And again, it's interesting to note that these folks would have been high up. They would have had access to the king. And again, now they're in the proximity. They're close to Joseph because of the way God is orchestrating all of these things. So it's just crazy. Like, just think about it. This slave, Joseph, who was accused of trying to commit adultery with his master's wife, is now caring for some of the people that have the greatest access to the king of Egypt. And so here's what we read then in verse 5 through 8. One night they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. So when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. And he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in the master's house, why are your faces downcast today? And he said to him, well, we've had dreams, and there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said, do not interpretations belong to God? So please tell them to me. So again, we see these dreams throughout this story. And remember the significance of dreams at this time for what this would mean for people as they had dreams. That dreams were seen in those days as being an omen from the gods. So as these guys are having these dreams, it would have been way more significant than what you or I may think of dreams now today. And so this is why they're troubled. Plus, like for us today, like if we have kind of a weird off dream, we're like, I had pizza. Like, it's maybe that's like what happened. But they didn't have pizza back then. So they have these kind of crazy dreams. And then Joseph is caring for them, and he sees that they're in trouble. So he offers to help. And so here's 2 points that I want to make about this brief interaction here that I think are really significant for us. So Joseph's in this period of waiting, right? And so you could say that he was even in a down period. He's in prison when he shouldn't have been. He's in a foreign land as a slave, falsely accused. He's in prison. All these things have happened to him. He has plenty of reason or he'd be justified to have himself a pity party, because ain't no party like a pity party. Pity party of one, please. But he doesn't have that. Instead, God is giving him success in all that he's doing. And he finds himself in prison now. Instead of having a pity party, he actually finds himself in a position of influence, in a position to help people, in a position to be around others people. And so he's doing this all in a prison. Not at all his dream that he had had before, that we talked about 2 weeks ago. Not at all the path that he thought he would take when he had those dreams. But Joseph continues to trust in God, respond in obedience, live for the Lord, and he finds himself time and time again in this place where even when he's in the most unlikely places, he's able to influence the culture around him instead of being influenced by the culture. So here's the point that I want to make, is when we keep our eyes fixed on the Lord and we hold on to our dreams, even in these down seasons, even when it feels like we're hard and we're at a totally different place than we ever thought we might be in pursuing our dream, when we live with integrity, even when it's hard, when we do this, God can use our lives in incredible ways, and we'll be able to make an impact for him. The other thing that happens when we focus on God in the midst of our ups and downs is that we see others. We see what others are going through. And so when we're in the midst of our own like little pity party and saying, I'm in the down season, I've been unfairly treated, I'm in prison when I shouldn't be, we miss the needs of what's happening in other people's lives. I mean, just think about this. If Joseph would have been sulking, he wouldn't have asked this question of these guys. He wouldn't have said, what's wrong? What's troubling you? And don't forget, this was completely unfair for Joseph. He had all reason to complain and sulk in the corner, but he doesn't. He's making the most of this new setting. He's making the most of this new surrounding, this journey, this adventure, and he notices. He notices the cupbearer. He notices the baker. He notices that they are in trouble. And the thing is, Joseph knows what it's like to be in difficulty because he's been in difficulty, because he's been through it. And so when he sees this on their faces, he's able to understand there's something going on because I've been through some stuff as well. And so he has this tender heart towards other people. So allow your ups and downs, the great things and the difficult seasons that you have, allow them to help you connect hearts, connect with people who might be in a similar season. So there's this Bible commentator, Joseph Exel. He wrote commentary back in the 70s, but I like what he said about this. He says, may we console ourselves under our own trials with the thought that God is endowing us thereby with the gift of sympathy and then fitting us to become sons, I'll add daughters, of consolation to others in affliction. So might the waiting room be an opportunity for us to expand and grow in our compassion, for us to continue to connect with the Lord in a way that draws others to him as we see the needs, as we understand what it's like to be in pain or be in a down season. It's like, you know, I know what it's like, and my God has helped me through this season, so let me point you to God. And so Joseph here offers the help, and God has given these gifts and abilities, and the favor of God has been on him throughout this whole story. But because he's not focused just on himself and the wrongs that have been done to him, he's able to step out and see others and point them to God. And here's the cool thing. Like, when he asks them this question, like, why are you troubled? He's simply just asking, noticing, and then asking. It unlocks their hearts. Right? They begin to share. Well, here's what's happened. Here's this dream that I've had. Here's this thing that's troubling me. All because Joseph took the time to simply ask one simple little question. And so it unlocks them, and they begin to open up to him, and they begin to share. And the same thing for us. As we notice people are in need, we say, hey, what's going on? Are you really okay? Like, not just the how's it going, but like, are you really okay? It can unlock their hearts to share what they're really walking through. And then we can help point them to God the way Joseph does. He says, all dreams belong to God. And the other thing that's cool is as he unlocks that, it also unlocks this next stage of the journey for Joseph, where he'll be able to find favor through the cupbearer later in the story, as we'll see. So God does something special in and through us as we allow this heart of compassion for others to be expressed through us as we meet with God in our own ups and downs. So when you're going through a down period, when it feels like nothing's been working out, everything's unfair, like you've been fairly treated, you've been overlooked, whatever that may be, when it seems like others are getting opportunities that you want or that you deserve, when it feels like your dream isn't being realized and others' dreams are, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to sulk, complain, kind of go in the corner? There might be a time where it's like, you know what, I'm feeling weak and you need to confess that to others. That can be a healthy thing. But to then begin to move past that, are you going to seize the adventure, keep your eyes fixed on God, live with integrity, notice pain in others, rely on God, press into him during those times? I mean, just think about what would happen in the church, like just in our world, if we as a church, if all the Christians embraced this, that in the midst of our downtimes, we focused on God and we were able to see the needs of others and just respond with love and say, hey, I see your hurting. I see you're having a hard time. What's going on? I love you. I may not have the answers, but I know the God who does, and let me help point you towards him. I mean, just think about what could happen if we begin to embrace that and begin to look that way. It would be amazing. So for you, how can you reach out to those in need because you know what it's like to be in need? How can you notice others when they're troubled because you've been troubled before? We typically have the greatest sympathy towards those who are walking through the very things that we've walked through that have been difficult, right? I mean, if we walk through something with a family, you know, we lose a parent, we know what it's like to do that, and we can easily walk through people who have done that, or whatever that may be, an illness, we've traveled through that. We simply have the greatest sympathy through those who are doing it. So, unrealized dreams, these guys have. Joseph knew what that's like. And so he steps in, says, why are you troubled? Let me help you. So be ready in these waiting periods of life. Don't think that you can't be used by God in the midst of the waiting period just because you're there, just because you're in a prison. Joseph knew that, and he was able to reach out to others. So don't be so frustrated in the waiting that you miss the beauty and the experience and just the wonder of the waiting period and what God can do in and through you through that. And then second thing, we talked about this last week, but I want to mention it again, is that notice how Joseph, again, he's giving all honor to God. Do not all interpretations belong to God? Please tell me. So Joseph is setting this up. This isn't him. This is God that's going to provide the answer and direct them. So step into the need and then point others to God. When we live for the Lord in this way, when we notice people, when we love them, when we're available to people, we have the opportunity then to point them to Jesus, who is the one that they ultimately do need, who will transform their lives, transform their direction in life, and ultimately transform everything about them. So the waiting, this new place, this unrealized dream doesn't mean that we can't live out a mission for God. So then the story continues to go, and it describes these dreams of the cupbearer and the baker. And so cupbearer goes first, and there's a vine, there's three branches, and he's like, I took the grapes, and I pressed them in Pharaoh's cup, and I put it in his hand, and Joseph's like, sweet, that's a cool dream. So here's what's going to happen. 3 days, you're going to be restored to your office. Everything's going to be okay. Just when you get there, just remember me. Don't forget, because I shouldn't really be in here, so just remember me. And then the cupbearer, like, sees the favorable interpretation. He's like, sweet. Also, he's a baker, so he says sweet a lot. And he's pumped, and he's like, let me tell you my dream now, Joseph. He's like, there was three cake baskets on my head, and then there was some baked food for Pharaoh, and then the birds came and ate it. And Joseph's like, all right. So you said the birds came, right? And the guy's like, yeah, well, good news, all good news. In 3 days, you're going to be out of prison, out of here. And the guy's like, beggar's like, nice. And then Joseph's like, and you'll lose your head and be hung by a tree and the birds are going to eat you. But you made oatmeal raisin cookies, so sorry, bro. And so long story short, the interpretations turn out to be exactly as Joseph had predicted. The cupbearer, so the story goes on, of course, and the cupbearer remembers Joseph, and Joseph is taken out of prison, and everything's good, and they're singing and dancing on the street, right? Like, no. Here's what we read, Joseph 40:23. Yet the cupbearer, chief cupbearer, did not remember Joseph, but he forgot him. And after 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile, and it goes on to describe this dream that Pharaoh had and that no one can interpret, so they end up calling Joseph out of prison. At that point, the cupbearer remembers. So the Joseph here, he's forgotten, obviously, by the cupbearer. It's like, how can this happen? Like, every time I read this story, I'm like, cupbearer, bro, like, how do you forget the person that correctly interpreted your dream? Like, I feel like that would be a pretty big deal. And if I was, like, elevated and the baker was elevated, like, and these things happen exactly as, like, I would not forget about that person. And yet, somehow, we don't know the details, but the cupbearer forgets. So My next point is that feeling forgotten doesn't necessarily mean that you are forgotten by God. So maybe you felt like this. Maybe something's happened in your life and you feel like things aren't working out the way you would draw it up. Like, I did it all right. And this is what we do. Oftentimes we'll put expectations or conditions on God. We think that, well, if I do this or that, then God will have to do this or that for me. Or it has to work out this way because this is what makes sense. This is my plan. Like, clearly this is how things should all. And so we can do that. And so we begin to feel like we're entitled to make things work our way if we do certain things. Joseph in the story, he specifically asked the cupbearer to remember him. It's right there in Scripture. He laid it all out for him, but it doesn't happen that way. He's forgotten. 2 years passed. 2 years go by. Joseph, day after day, for 730 days, Joseph is waking up, caring for the prisoners just like he has, with no assurance that it will ever end. I can just imagine Joseph just waking up being like, is this the day I get out? Or am I just going to be here for the rest of my days? Am I just going to stay in this prison? What's going to happen? And yet he continues to be faithful. So again, Joseph Exel says, keep near to God, therefore, these waiting periods. Form your character according to his principles. And then, even though you may be in a prison, you'll find a way to serve him and feel that somehow you're on the road to your success and training for your sphere. So might this waiting room, might this time that you're waiting, where you maybe feel like you've been forgotten, might it actually be a time of training? Might there be a greater purpose for you to come out because there's this waiting period? Might there be more there than what you may think? Might your plan not be maybe what's best for you? Be careful to not put expectations. Be careful to not put conditions on God, because likely you might be selling yourself short or even God short. Here's the thing. Joseph had to stay in prison for these 2 years because he had to wait for Pharaoh to have the dream so that he could be raised all the way to second in command. If he would have probably gotten out, you know, just right away, right when the cupbearer came out, maybe he would have gotten out and that would have been free and all that, but he may have just gone back to be a slave somewhere and maybe a nice home, you know, things like that. But would he have risen to this second in command? The reason he was able to get that is because he interprets Pharaoh's dream. So there's this waiting period, and God is using that for the right time to pull Joseph out of prison. So Isaiah 55 says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So your plan is nothing in comparison to what God can do and will do in and through you as you wait, as you trust, as you continue to focus in on him. If the cupbearer would have, I already said that. So fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of your faith. Trust in him in the midst of this, because he's your creator. He is Lord of all. He is the mighty God, and he can do more through you than you could ever ask or imagine. So this is why it's so significant, because you are not forgotten. Joseph was not forgotten by God during these 2 years. There's a greater plan for him. So continue to trust God. If you feel like you're in this waiting period, you feel like you've been forgotten by God, know that you're not, that his promises are good, that he can use you, he is working, and you can trust in him. Continue to look to him and allow him to change your perspective in the midst of the season, because doing that will change the way you approach the waiting room and what you do and how you learn and how you grow in the midst of all that. Then my last point is this, is while you wait, God is working. So allow this waiting room, allow this period of waiting to develop you, to strengthen your character, to encourage your faith, to build on your gifts, to all these different things can happen in the midst of the waiting room. And here's the cool thing about Joseph, is he could have come out of this 2 year time just bitter and angry, like finally, like I shouldn't have been in there. I was forgotten. Like, how could you have left me in there? But he doesn't. The first words that we read about Joseph is he's talking about how awesome God is. He says, and Max Lucado says it like this: Joseph emerges from the prison bragging on God. Jail time didn't devastate his faith; it deepened it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh. This is the first thing it's not me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. He still believes, he still trusts in God for favor, for provision, for answers, for goodness, for direction, because he's seen it time and time again. And so those 2 years did not destroy Joseph's faith. It continued to build and strengthen. And he comes out bragging on God and talking about how amazing God is. Imagine if we would emerge from our waiting rooms with that kind of confidence in God. And the only way that happens is we fix our eyes on God. We trust him in the midst of the waiting. We recognize that he is working if we don't necessarily see everything that's happened. It comes down to faith. It comes down to trust. It comes down to walking in obedience. And this is what's so amazing throughout the story of Joseph. It's like somehow he knows the bigger picture when he doesn't. But he just continues to walk in obedience, continues to trust in God. So God can and will work in your life in the midst of this waiting season. And so oftentimes what happens, if those of you that have been in waiting season, you kind of come out and you're able to kind of look back on that time, it's like, wow, God did this. Wow, that was an amazing time, and I'm actually really thankful for this period of my life because you see all that God can do. What if we began to position our eyes more to focus on Christ so that maybe we could be more aware or just trust more in the midst of that process what God can do and not allow the unknown to wear on us, but instead to trust and continue to faith and be built closer and closer to him. So why I love this story so much. So Psalm 37:7 says, "Be still in the presence of the Lord. Wait patiently for him to act. Don't worry about evil people who prosper or fret about their wicked schemes." And I just see Joseph, like, just not worrying about the cupbearer. He forgot, like, I'm going to continue to wait patiently on the Lord. I'm not going to grow bitter at the cupbearer. I'm not going to get angry at him. And we don't know what happened in Joseph, but all we know is as he emerged, these are his first words. So Max Lucado again says, to wait, biblically speaking, is to not assume the worst, worry, fret, make demands, or take control, nor is waiting an activity. Waiting is a sustained effort to stay focused on God through prayer, through belief, through faith, through trust in him. Be in his presence, continually fix your eyes on him, trust in him, wait for him. Later in the story of Israel, so if you know kind of the beginning of the Bible, you know, we're studying this story where Joseph is in Egypt, and eventually we'll look at next week is his brothers and his family named Israel, his father named Israel, comes down to that land, and they're able to be provided for during the midst of the famine. They're able to save, and they grow, and they multiply, and they become this great nation. And then Egypt later, their pharaohs later, kind of they forget Joseph, and they see this great nation. They become intimidated, so they make them slaves. And then ultimately, God raises Moses up to pull the nation of Israel out and bring them back to the land of Israel, of Jacob, that we have seen. And so on this Exodus, we read about this in Exodus, on this Exodus from Egypt back to the promised land, we see that the Egyptian army is pursuing the Israelites, and they find themselves between a rock and a hard place, if you will, or between a sea and an army. And they're there waiting. They're not sure what to do, and they're scared, and there's this sea. It's like, how will we ever get across? The armies are going to crush them, and there's like nowhere to turn. What are we waiting for? Like, what's going to happen? And here's what Moses tells the people. I love this passage. Don't be afraid. He's like, just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord himself will fight for you. Just stay calm. And that waiting room, that place where you feel stuck, that place that scares you, that place where you're looking this way and it's like, that doesn't look good, and that doesn't look good either. Could that actually be the place that develops your faith and you grow more than you could anywhere else? Where a deep sense of faith is developed within you, or you see God's hand work in amazing ways? Will you trust God in the midst of that place? Will you just sit back, trust in him, focus on him, and allow him to fight for you? Allow him to be the one that pulls you out of the waiting room at the perfect time, at the right time, so you can continue to walk in obedience? Or are you just going to kind of complain and go in the corner of the prison and put your head down and have a good old-fashioned pity party? So I'm going to have Cody come and share again part three, if you will, of his story. I really appreciated Cody sharing throughout this series.
I got amped again, Chad. I got amped again. Sorry, yep, that, amp. 2 full years. Genesis 41 starts out, 2 full years later, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by. 2 full years, like... I would have been impressed if it would have been like 2 full hours later, Pharaoh had this dream. If this story was about me, I would have like walked out of prison. 2 full hours later, Pharaoh had a dream, and the cupbearer was like, hey, you should talk to Cody. And then Cody comes out of prison, and he's like, God, what took so long? Like 2 hours, you know what I'm saying? 2 full years. This passage just blows my mind. I'm not here to preach. I'm here to tell a story. Stop. Story is this. I wasn't All right, so I was in high school. High school was coming to an end, and you know, it's like, what's next? What's next in high school? And so I applied to two colleges. I applied to Messiah College in Millersville, and I was accepted to both. I was also looking at the Air Force, and I was looking at a missions training school called called YWAM, Discipleship Training School. I applied to one in Australia, and I don't think I ever submitted that application, but I did fill it out. And so kind of like the summer came and went, and I didn't do any of those things. And I started working for my dad. My dad has a landscaping business. I started working for him. I was very lonely. It was just a small company, so I was alone very often, you know, for the whole day, or I would talk to his other employee. But, you know, just a very lonely situation for me. I got into an extremely unhealthy dating relationship, most unhealthy dating relationship of my entire life, and that just like spiraled down into the depths of unhealthiness. And I, looking back at it now, you know, at the time it didn't feel like this, but looking back at it, it was really one of the lowest times of my life. Not because, like, I wasn't thinking about God. I wasn't thinking like, is God turning his back on me? What should I do with my life? I just wasn't even. Like, I was turning my back on God, and that's, I think, what made it one of the lowest times of my life. And that was 6 months, so it was longer than 2 hours. So I was trying to think of a story to, like, that to be comparable to Joseph. You just can't touch the guy. The guy's a rock. That was 6 months, and my sister came home from her YWAM experience. She was full-time missions at this point. She had done that, like, 2 or 3 years earlier. And it was Christmas Day, and she's like, why don't we look at some DTSs and see if there's one for you? And long story short, I applied to one, and I got into it, and I was down in Florida 2 weeks later. It was very rapid when it happened. And in that discipleship training school, that's when I learned what it meant to follow Jesus. And I learned this very rapidly, like within the first 2 weeks. To follow Jesus, to not just call myself a Christian, but to follow Jesus. And numerous spiritual breakthroughs in that time, like for myself, we went through this whole forgiveness process where we forgave everybody that we could think of to forgive, and then we also reached out to any person that we thought we had wronged and you know, and never asked forgiveness for, which was like the most healing, crazy thing I've ever done in my life. Just numerous women, young women that I had hurt throughout my whole dating, all of my dating relationships, all in high school, middle school and high school, and just amazing miracles that happened through that. But that, you know, that time, that DTS for me, it literally set the foundation for everything that I have now. You know, today's Father's Day, I have two baby girls. I have Amber, my amazing wife. I have this church family, a business. All of these things, like, I couldn't have had any of those things without that training period of my life, that foundation setting. And I couldn't have had that foundation setting had I not had that lowest time of my life that I needed to come up out of and kind of have these realizations. So the encouragement through this story is if you're in this waiting period, You've got to know the God we serve is a good God, and there is something on the other side of the top of this mountain, and it's something wonderful. And at some point, you will look back on this time and say, oh my goodness, I couldn't have had what I had now if I didn't have that then. And that's how it went for me. I'm so thankful that Joseph was a stronger dude than I was, because this story just blows my mind every week. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Cody. Band can come on back up. We're gonna wrap up here. I think it's amazing. There's been so many times looking back on my life, like Cody shared, it's like these kind of confusing seasons, or even find yourself in a place like you didn't think you would be. Like for Cody, it was a DTS 6 months before. You didn't even have thought that he would be there. That God uses these things to just mold us and shape us and to transform us and to more and more who we are and who he is. And it's just awesome to look back. And I was reading and studying this story. I just felt really challenged. Like, God, in the midst of these waiting seasons, like, how can I trust in you more? You know, so much of me personally, I'm a calculated person. Like, I like to have my ducks in a row. I don't know if you're kind of wired like me. And so when I don't know, like, how to get from A to B, I just know that I need to get from A to B. It can kind of be, like, annoying to me. And I want to figure that out. But there's been so many times where it's like, I don't know. I can't calculate it because God's the one that's calculated it. And I just need to trust in him and follow him. And I need to take one step at a time and just trust that he'll reveal each step next. And doing that builds my faith. And it's so amazing because then I have to rely on him instead of my own ability to calculate things. Does that make sense? That's so powerful about these waiting room experiences, that God can work so deeply in and through us. And I hope that you're seeing that. And if you feel like, man, if you feel like you're like, Chad, I wish I was further along, or I feel like I've been stuck for a long time. You know, 2 years actually feels short, Chad. I just want you to trust that God is working. God is there. God is building something. God sees what's on the other side. And you can continue to trust in him and follow him. Isaiah 40:31 says, for those who hope in the Lord, and this would be hope for you, is that in the midst of the waiting season, you hope in the Lord, that you'll renew your strength, that you'll soar on wings like eagles, that you'll run and not grow weary, that you'll walk and not be faint. And I see this in Joseph. I see this in this story as he focuses on God, that he has this strength to do things that when I look at it, it's like, man, if I was in prison, I don't know if I'd be doing that. It's powerful. So I want you to note again just these connections that we see in this story of Joseph with the story of Jesus Christ. Jesus, throughout his walk, throughout his journey here on earth, he's constantly noticing people who are hurting. He's constantly seeing them, going up to them, ministering, healing, loving. He wasn't so into his own responsibilities or his stuff that he was missing this. You might say, well, that was Jesus. But also think about the cross. When he's on the cross in the midst of pain, in the midst of all this stuff, mocking, he reaches out to the prisoner next to him. He's just aware. And so likewise, Joseph is doing that. And likewise, we can be doing that in the midst of our waiting room. And the other thing, you know, in the garden, Jesus is reaching out to prayer. He's reaching out to the Father. He's focusing on the Father. And then even the story of Lazarus, if you're familiar with the story of Lazarus, Jesus waits for 2 days to bring Lazarus back to life. And he says he's waiting so that the glory of God may be known. And coming out of the waiting period, when we do that, when we focus on the Lord, that God is the one that receives glory and honor, not us. And that's what it's all about. It's about giving him honor and glory. So there's hope in the waiting. There's meaning in the waiting. God will help you get through this. Just trust in him. Continue to focus on him. And again, this morning, we're going to end with a time of communion I will have available for you. Because I just believe it's really important for us to take some time, to carve out some time in our week and do this together as a community. Say, God, thank you so much for your love, for your sacrifice, for all that you've done. I will trust in you in the midst of my waiting season, and be reminded, as we take communion, be reminded of the power of his sacrifice and his love for us, that he sees us, that you're not forgotten. He did that for all of us. So communion will be available. Also, on the back of your bulletin, there's a sticky note. It's gray. And I just encourage you, kind of like we did a couple weeks ago, if you're in a waiting season, And maybe you're just struggling in the midst of that, just write that down or write out whatever you want and come to the cross and just spend some time praying and saying, God, in the midst, I'm going to put this waiting period, whatever this is, I'm going to put it on the cross because I'm going to choose to trust you and I'm going to look to you in the midst of the season. Almost just symbolically, I'm going to place this waiting season on the cross because I know that's where I need to fix my gaze in the midst of the waiting season. I need to fix my gaze on Jesus. And so I want you to write that down and put it up there. Communion will be available. The prayer team will be up. Cody and Amber are going to be up here as well if you'd like to pray with them. And they'll be up front here to be available for prayer. So let's pray. Let's worship together. And let's pray. God, we thank you so much. God, I just thank you so much for your faithfulness in the midst of these times in our lives. Lord, I think for those of us who had waiting room experiences or periods in our life and have been able to get out and to look back, we see how your hand was there teaching and guiding us and using this time. God, we see this in the story of Joseph just so powerfully. I thank you for that. I just thank you that you'll never leave us. You'll never forsake us. You never walk away from us. But God, you are there with us. And I just pray that we would get our eyes maybe off the ground in sorrow and frustration or fatigue or whatever that may be. And God, that you just help us to lift our eyes, lift our gaze, and to begin to look to you. That we begin to trust in you, that we our faith would grow. God, we believe in you in the midst of this season. God, we just thank you so much for your faithfulness. Thank you for your promises. God, I just pray as we respond, you'd meet us where we are. Thank you for the cross. Thank you for your resurrection. Thank you for the hope that we have in you and your love. God, we just ask you to lead us now. In your name, amen. Again, go ahead and stand. We'll sing. You can respond as you feel led. Pray at the cross. Pray with the prayer team.